You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride or Crash podcast.
Hi, guys.
No, this is how it should sound.
Yeah.
Speak really quick. No, this is great.
No, yeah, hi.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
no.
You just have to, like, speak.
Sure, enunciate.
Yeah.
Properly.
A, B, C, D.
Ooh, I mean,
how do artists
kind of
do this all day? This is really a lot of work.
Oh, yeah. It's hard stuff. It's
yeah,
tough.
You got it.
Yeah.
All right. It's a tough life they all lead.
I think I'm really nervous.
Are you actually nervous?
No, you're not.
Probably not.
Have you ever done what you've done?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But every time you're just like, what if I screw it up?
It's okay. We have. That's why we edit. We
can
edit.
It's not live.
That's why we can edit it.
Yeah, every time we do these, later the artist texts us, like, can you take that one part out?
Yeah, or I say something, like, shitty. Or
yeah. Most of the time, Morgan's saying something.
Yeah. Like, soup. Yeah, like, it's...
All right, I'll leave it to you.
That's fine. I mean, I always do something wrong.
So, let's get going.
I mean, we have been going.
Oh, yeah? This is it?
Yeah, we can just start whenever. I think that's like a good thing. It's like a good thing to do. You go.
Okay.
Let Babs take the... Jesus, take the wheel.
Okay, so we've been going.
Hey, Babs.
Hi.
How's it been going?
Good. How was your allergic reaction?
Oh, it was the worst.
No,
that's not important yet.
You don't want to even do that?
We've just been going. People will figure it
you
out.
You just said.
Yeah, but that's how I say. You go, you say like,
oh,
who
I'm
is...
so sorry. So it seems like you have the formula, so you go.
Usually when you start a podcast, you're like, hey, this is Mike Kaminsky. He does this.
But we've been going.
Yeah, but we didn't even say his name.
I think when people find out who it is, they might skip to the next podcast. So let's do the grand reveal
at
the end.
Yeah, let's do the grand
reveal. You
want to
do that?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
No one will know.
All right.
No, it's been a weird day. I was having breakfast. I always eat at this one coffee shop next to your office.
Squirrel.
I've been going there almost every day for like 3 years.
What do you get?
Yeah. We're so sick of it.
Well, I went there yesterday.
Okay, so I went every day.
Bad judgment.
Diarrhea.
I went every day to meet this girl there.
Yeah.
And so I went. It just became my local spot because I was... like trying, I had a crush on this girl, and now we're dating.
Wait,
and
hold
we've
on.
Been dating for a year.
I knew this story, but she was there at the same time every day you were.
Yeah, I went one day, and you know how people are just like, I saw this person, and it was love at first sight.
Yeah,
and we're always like, that's the dumbest thing that doesn't happen. That mm-hmm. So I went, and I was love at first sight, and I was just like, who's that girl? Like, mm-hmm. I have to figure this out. And I posted on Craigslist Misconnections. And did not get a response.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. I've...
I was desperate to just find out who she was. So I did a lot of silly, stupid... Like, in
you
hindsight,
did a bunch
it's
of
very cringeworthy.
Stuff. Did you go to, like...
Like, what else did you do?
Did you go to, like, the squirrel hashtags and, like, look through the pictures
oh,
and
yeah,
stuff?
I went through everything, but she does not really have social media,
nice.
So that didn't work. And I just... I would just kept going, and I was like, well, maybe I'll see her again. I'm sure we have a connection, like, mm-hmm. obviously.
Did she look at you, like, when you saw her?
So here's the thing. She did look at me, and we shared a moment. And I was like, ah, clearly there's something there. And when I posted on Miss Connections, this company contacted me and said, we're going through cute Miss Connections, and we run this TV show where we bring you onto a show, and then we find out who she is, and we bring her on the show, and we introduce you live on air.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to do that? And I thought about it for
it's
a
like
second.
Like the opposite of catfish?
I mean, I don't know who they would have actually brought on the show. Could
okay.
have been anyone. But I really considered for a second doing it, because I was just like, we shared a moment. We have to figure out who this woman is. And then, luckily, you know, I thought better of it. I decided not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I started to go. It was just a habit to keep going to this coffee shop. And we ended up sitting next to each other for the next 9 months. She would be the only person there reading a book, and I would bring my book, and we would just sit next to each other and share a moment. And I didn't want to be like weird, creepy guy and
sure.
not talk or bother someone or anything. So I was just like, this is very nice for sharing these moments. I'd be like texting my friends. Like,
right. So you had a girlfriend in your head. She was your girlfriend, and
yeah.
she didn't know yet for 9 months.
I was already
months.
Planning the
yeah,
wedding.
For sure.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So finally my friends are like, you just have to talk to her. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to be weird. I'm very sensitive to, like, overstepping boundaries mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. So finally.
What's that like? Because I am not.
Well, you're about to learn. So after literally months of sitting next to each other almost every day, yeah. reading books next to each other, drinking coffee.
At this time, did you say, have you guys spoken?
Like, at all? Like, nothing. Hi, how
nothing.
Are you?
Literally nothing.
We like, you guys just do, like, the nod, the head nod, or at all? Like, no, like nothing?
No,
nothing?
We would just, no. It was weird. So I think we were both, like, really intimidated, right? Or, like, kind of
for
scared.
For 9 months, though?
It was actually more than 9 months, because oh, wow. I figured out
usually when date. People exaggerate, they go less, or they go way more.
No, no, no.
And you're like, around 9 months, and you went, you undershot.
I'm trying to save myself a little bit of embarrassment. No, it was about a year. And finally, my friends, because we didn't plan on it. So sure. some days I would go, and she wouldn't be there, and some days she would go, and I wouldn't be there.
Right.
And like, but I was going to sit next to her and read my book. It was really nice. So after basically a year, all my friends are like, you just have to do it. It's not going to be weird. It's like now weird that you haven't done it.
Exactly.
I said, okay.
Yeah.
So finally, I like get up the courage and I walk over to her. I'm like, I really don't mean to bother you, but you know, we're sitting next to each other reading this book and I just want to introduce myself. And
because
I think
we
it's
are in a
really
relationship.
Yeah. We're married. You don't know that. But you know, I just wanted to say hi. Like, you know, I've obviously been seeing you here for a year. And she looks at me. And she looks really confused, and she goes, I've never seen you before
no.
in my life.
No.
Are you fucking serious?
And I was like, okay, gotta go, bye.
Holy shit.
And we had been sitting next to each other, and in my head, we were, like, and this is true, like, we were sitting next to each other all the time, uh-huh. like, reading our books. And in my head, I was like, oh, clearly, and to her,
nothing.
No idea.
Nothing.
Nothing. So for 9 more months.
No.
And I have all the text logs of between me and my friend, so I know the time frame. For the next 9 months, like, I would still go, but in my head, it was all over. It was
right, like, you blew it like it's...
Huge
yeah,
mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why did I do this?
Uh-huh.
I can't live with myself. Like, this is so embarrassing. And I would go, but now she recognized me.
Right.
And she'd be like, oh, hi. I'd be like, oh, hi. And that was, like, it for 2 months. And then after a few months, she'd be like, oh, what's your name? What are you reading? Oh, okay. And so, very long story short, it took 2 years, and now we've been dating, and it worked out.
So, how long have you been officially dating?
Almost a year.
Great, so you guys have been
like
together three years.
Yeah. So when people ask me how long we've been dating, I say 3 years.
So, during this time, did you talk, were you, like, interested in anybody else? Did you go on any other dates
yeah.
whatsoever?
Yeah. I was dating a lot, but in my head, I was always nice. Comparing to her.
Right.
Because I was trying to be realistic.
Sure.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, that makes
this
sense.
This will never work.
Yeah, of course.
This is my fantasy. Like, fantasies never come true.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way that...
It's the story of my life.
I really... Yeah, I didn't know this was like a 2 year... I knew
this
that that
is
was...
amazing.
I knew that that's how you guys met, but I didn't know
yeah,
that
I
this
didn't
was
know
like
the
a...
Details.
I didn't know this was like
well,
leading up
so,
to...
Okay, but here's my question. You spent a really long time sort of like imagining what it would be like
yeah.
right
uh-huh.
with her
yeah
and so wasn't it like you had so many expectations when you guys actually started dating or it was kind of like
no she was actually cooler
okay that's cool
yeah.
okay
but like the way I look at this now because I told the story a few times and like it's like a Hollywood movie romance but if it in any city other than Hollywood it's just me being kind of a
creep.
Yeah.
So it's pretty embarrassing.
I mean,
it's
I think
like,
it's
oh,
great.
No, I think it's cool because...
What's going on? Am I doing this? I'm...
Ricky.
What channel am I in? Check. Turn me down just a little bit.
Yeah.
You said it wasn't loud.
You weren't. You're not. You and Mike aren't.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. A little bit higher. Oh, that's what I'm in? Okay. Great. This is good. I just don't want to peek when we do this thing.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. All right. That's fine. Great. We're back to normal.
Okay.
I mean, in any other place but here.
Oh, yeah. You're good.
Anywhere else, this is a terrible story. People would just be like, how could you do that to someone? Why would you
I mean,
do
it
that?
Sounds... I've definitely done those things. But it's,
secretly,
it's
a, I think we've all
yeah,
done something like that.
I
like, you have a crush on someone, and yeah. you're like, well, where's the line?
I mean, I think it's really different that you talk about it, though. And I think that that's what the great thing is. There's a lot of stuff that you actually do talk about.
Mm.
We've known you for how long now?
Well, if you ask me, 5 years.
Right.
If we ask you, about a year.
Yeah, we've been watching you. You've been watching us for... No, so we... And then that's the cool. One thing that, like, I've...
How's the family?
That's really funny.
How's the dog?
Yeah, you know everybody way longer than they know you.
All my bands are like, who?
But, like, I really love this story because I feel like, especially living in L.A., I mean, we've been traveling a lot for Emo Night, and anywhere else is better than L.A., you know? And it's because of reasons like this that I feel like here, even, you know, at Emo Night, somebody sees someone they like, and then they'll, like, DM them on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, no, never. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the shittiest way to contact someone.
Which it works 100% of the time.
It works, but I don't think it's anything, like,
I mean,
lasting.
It's not a love story.
Yeah, it's not a love story.
It's not a love story. You don't really hear love stories anymore.
Exactly. Like, I feel like people have lost the ability to create a love story, you know, because of technology. You're just able to find someone and then... reach out to them, but I feel like it's such a shitty way to try to get to someone.
Well, I mean, if we had movies,
whereas you're on the very opposite end.
Yeah, you're
of the
on
spectrum.
Like the 1% of like the people that do things the way that like we perceive things in movies and
Well, it only worked, I think, because
what,
she
Ricky?
Was.
Oh, it's real John Cusack shit.
Yeah, kind of.
Nicholas Sparks.
But it only worked because she's foreign, right? And I feel like.
Oh,
so
she's
Australian.
Oh, shit. I'm so sorry. I always forget she has
an
accent. Okay.
So,
she like, doesn't seem like she would have an accent.
It's true. She doesn't seem
like
she
Well, I didn't know
she
had an accent for a year.
For the 2 years you guys were in a relationship.
No, but here's what I found in L.A. Dating aside, if I'm like, I like to go out and like I'll read at a coffee shop or I'll do something. And if I see someone else who's reading, especially like one of my favorite books, and you walk over to someone and you go, that's one of my favorite books. How do you enjoy that book? They'll look at you like, why are you talking to me?
Oh, yeah.
You're invading my private space. Like, give me a bubble. And you're like, okay, sorry. And so a couple years back, I spent a month in Australia. And my third day, I'm reading this like really intense book. I'm really engrossed in it. And this person's sitting next to me. And she's just like, that's one of my favorite books. I was like, can we talk about this? This has literally never happened in my entire life.
Dude, LA is one of the weirdest places ever because everybody wants to be social, but once you start to be social,
it's like, what do you want?
Yeah.
Why are you talking to me? You must want something.
And that,
no, I just actually do like that
book. Yeah, like I like that book.
I also like talking to people. I talk to fucking every single person,
true,
which is like a, but everybody else seems to think that that's like a weird thing. Like, why are you talking to that stranger?
Mm-hmm.
And like, why are you? And then I never thought that that was a weird, weird thing. So when people do talk to me, I get caught off guard because I'm not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like, why are you talking back to me?
Yeah.
What, so how did you guys, you know,
how did what?
Like, I mean, so you started talking, like, after, like, those, like...
Oh, I left out a big part of the story.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean, we didn't...
I don't know if we want to dwell on the story, but this
I
is an important part.
I think that
this
we really
do. This is the best story we've ever
heard, so. A year in, so a year in when we finally say hi.
But a year from, like, what?
From when I saw her.
Okay.
So I basically say hi to her for the first time. For her, it's day two, right? So we say hi to each other. I'm just a guy at a coffee shop. She's just a woman at a coffee shop.
So day one, you say, hey, like, we've both been here reading. And she's like, I've never seen you. Then this is day two.
So basically for the next few weeks after that, it was just like some casual waves. Like, oh, hi, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
A month or two in, we finally like talk. I found out she has a boyfriend. So then I feel like the worst person on earth. Mm-hmm. Like, here I have been having this relationship in my head,
right,
which is like, which is like basically cheating,
basically
even
cheating.
Though I didn't
right,
know,
no, yeah,
and she didn't know.
Yeah, you made her cheat.
Yeah, so we're all big cheaters. No, so I found that out, and like the whole world like stopped, and I was like, whoa, this has been going on in my head as like, oh, I've had this crush on this girl, this is really cool, super inappropriate, like I didn't even know anything, I didn't find out any of this. So we actually like stopped any semblance of romance.
How did you find out she had a boyfriend?
I mean, she just told me.
She was like, I have a boyfriend.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, it came up in conversations, as they often do when there's a boyfriend or girlfriend.
Sure.
But from that point, actually, it was really good because legitimately it like took any edge off and we truly became...
Like friends?
Like just friends. Like coffee shop friends. We just hang and talk about books and... I can honestly say, and I've like soul searched a lot, like, well, is there maybe something? No, honestly, it was truly 100% just friends. And when it ended up not working out with her boyfriend, we talked about it and we're like, well, you know, we've known each other. Maybe we should give it a shot. And then we like started dating. So we started dating much, much further into it.
What did you guys do for your like first date? You're like, I've never seen you outside of Squirrel. Was it like...
No, you know what? It was very impromptu. It was, we were having breakfast and we were like talked about it. And then we were both going to go home. And she was like, well, why don't we go for a walk? And I was like, oh. Oh, that's a good idea. Let's go for a walk. So we went for a walk, and then we ended up at a museum, and then we went to dinner, and we, like, yeah, spent a whole bunch of time together, and it just kind of turned into one.
Mike Kaminsky, the last true romantic.
It took me 37 years to get there.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever... And you love her.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's really great.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever felt like this before? Or is it different? Because I found that, like, this is what my therapist Dr. Jonathan had told me, which is he's not a doctor. every time I go to him he's like, you know, you can't call me a doctor to like other people, and he's like, I'm not technically a doctor. And then he's also like, you can't talk about Frasier for the whole hour because it doesn't make sense for you to pay me.
We're not recording this. It's not on TV.
Yeah, he's like, it doesn't make sense for you to talk about Frasier for an hour with your therapist. But he was like, he said there are three types of people you date. Mm-hmm. And the first type are the people that you It's like, you think you want, then the second type of people, and you date that person once.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, like, there are three types. You date a ton of people, but they all fall into this category. The first type is the people that you think you want. Like, mm-hmm. that's what you think that you should be with.
Mm-hmm.
The second time is the wrong people, and you date those people a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, you go, and then the third time is different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a different type of feeling than all those other two,
mm-hmm.
those other two people that you've dated, and those are the people that you end up with is the different. It's like a different feeling. Like I didn't understand what that meant, but I remember that like when I started dating people, I was like, I love that person, I love her, I love that, like, and you feel these really really intense feelings, and then you date other people, find out what's wrong, mm-hmm. you find a little bit more about yourself. And then the third type of person is, I think it's obviously when you're older, you're like, this is different. I don't have those like crazy, crazy, crazy love feelings, but this is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this feels different and right.
Mm-hmm.
I fucked it up a bunch. That's like probably very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was what I really like. Try and pay attention every time he listens, because every time he says some shit,
getting your money's worth. No,
yeah, I know. The only things I remembered are feelings aren't facts.
But how do you feel about Frasier?
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, don't.
I just started. I mean, I'm like right at the point where like Daphne and Niles are like together. No. You know, like I just started that, and it's like it feels uncomfortable to me because it's like I really liked them more as like a like you were. Niles is a very Mike Kaminsky type of guy, like watching Daphne from afar for 7 years.
That's actually a very good visual for everyone who is listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the only people that are listening that I watch Frasier are me and you.
Yes. Yeah. And somehow my mom will figure out how podcasting works so she can listen to this.
Nice.
So that's going to be real embarrassing.
Very nice.
I know. That's mainly the reason why I do a lot of stuff, is so my mom can be like, my son did this.
Yeah. My mom somehow listens to every interview or anything I've ever done. Going back to your previous point, I do think that's true. And like to tie this into music, you know, my first real heartbreak... Like, you don't have an outlet. You don't have any friends who can relate to you or can, like, help you go through it. And for me, it really was, like, okay, literally the only place I could turn was to music. And that's honestly a big part of, like, why I'm here for the last 37 years, been trying to figure out how to get to this moment I'm at right now. And, you know, 20 of those years have been working in music and in these communities. And that truly is, like, a big part of at least why I started.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So, like, give us, like, a quick timeline of you. Because, like, We know what you do.
Why
kind
we didn't
of.
Even talk about? Yeah, we know.
We
didn't
know
even
what you do
reduce.
Kind of. Like we know what you do kind of.
It's a loose sort of podcast.
Yeah,
and I mean sometimes we'll go the whole time, and then the last 5 minutes, we're like, we should talk about.
Yeah, like no, it's great. We can do whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, give people a sort of a timeline, because for us, like ever since we started Emo Night and Ride or Cry, you've been somebody that we really look up to and someone we really respect, and you know sometimes it'll come up in conversation. Like,
speak for yourself.
Okay. Sometimes it comes up in conversation, like who, you know, who do you guys look up to, and like we always think of you.
Yeah, because we do reference you a lot.
We reference you a lot, and you've always been really nice to us, and I don't know.
Like
I just feel like
nice.
It's like rare. It's rare. I feel like there's so many people who are nice because they want something, you know? And I think we're finding that out a lot of, like, who is actually trying to be friends with us or, like, be in this world or who, like, really just wants something. And, you know, I feel like you're just a really genuine person. But anyway, let people know.
I mean, my ex-girlfriend, you were the only person that she thought was attractive out of every Like, out of every single one of my friends, she was like, he has kind eyes and I think he's handsome. And I was like,
can you tell my girlfriend?
Yeah.
But I hadn't met her yet.
Yeah.
I hadn't met my girlfriend.
Well, but in your mind.
I mean, in my head, we were married. I should have said my wife. No, that's very nice. That's actually, that's the absolute best compliment I think I ever could receive.
Well, that's good. And she's good at giving you that. Then.
Oh, I mean that compliment and Bab's compliment. I meant
I
being
think
kind.
My compliment, but okay.
But that's nice.
Kind eyes, just the best.
Yeah.
Compliment.
No, that's very. No,
she thought you were hot.
That truly is. No, it's right. So here's what happened. My first concert ever. I'm 17 years old. April 1st, 1997. I see Radiohead. To even experience music for your first time at 17, I was like really, really, really far behind. Mm-hmm. And when I got into college, I was a business major, and halfway through, I was in a macroeconomics class, and there's all this math, and I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, this is not how I want to spend my life. I'm done. So I got up, just walked out midway through the class, and I started filling out paperwork, and I got a grant to start a television station at my school. And so now I had all this video gear. And I was like, well, what am I going to do with it? So we started the TV station, but we would reach out to bands. And so I was on Napster, not like the internet had just been invented. And so there's this program called Napster, and you could like download demos. So I was downloading a bunch of music. I mean, I would download hundreds and hundreds of songs. And if there was a band that I just really liked, I would just send them an email. And most of them didn't even have email because that hadn't really been invented yet.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, someone would write you back. And then be like, great, we'll be there. Like, let's figure it out. So,
what kind of bands were these? Like, what were you listening to in 97?
God, this was like Jimmy World. There was this band Seville. It was like the San Diego. It was like right after all the Blink 182 stuff, and I had missed all that. But there was like the drive-thru record scene.
That was what me and you're a little bit older than me, but not by much.
Yeah.
And that's where I was at too.
Yeah, and it was so cool. Were you from SoCal?
No, I grew up in like Tucson.
Ah, yeah. Well, that's
cool. So we had like
cool.
We had like the Jimmy World, but I like
right.
There were all these. I talk about this a lot, but all the Bosnians came over from Kosovo for the war, and for some reason they really really liked all this San Diego like post hardcore like indie stuff like 3 Mile Pilot and No Knife, and it was all like very you know, Black Heart Procession and shit. So so they were like very very about that, but it introduced me to things like Hot Snakes and Rocket from the Crypt and shit like that. So
yeah,
it was
a lot of the Vagrant stuff.
All the Vagrant.
Remember, like all No Motive and all stuff like that. Yeah, it was
but
super
like,
fun.
The Vagrant stuff was the same time as like the drive through stuff.
It was.
I think it was at its peak.
Yeah, it probably was. And I remember just reading, you know, I read everything by Richard Raines and Rich Egan, who like started these labels, and like I was always looking up to them, like, wow, this community is so cool. I've never been a part of a community like this. I've never been part of a scene like this. And everyone's like working together, and it was really building. And it was so weird because like I was in San Diego during, you know, this thing. So I remember like going to see Dashboard, and he played, you know, to 30 people, and then he would announce the next band, which would be like Finch, and then Finch would get super big, and then Finch would be like, at our next show, we're going to announce the new signing to Drive Thru Records, and it was like like mayhem, like at, like the people coming to the show, like, who is it? I can't, you know, this was before everyone was on every message board and you know everything. And you'd go to the Finch show and at the very end they'd be like, and we're announcing the new signing, Something Corporate. And you'd be like, what the hell is Something Corporate? And some kid would come out on piano and play a song and just be like, wow, it's unreal. Like, you could just feel it. It was so amazing to be like a part of that, and that's what sucked me into the scene.
Were you involved in that, in the music scene by that, at that point? Because there's a good chance that you and I probably crossed paths at some point years ago.
Here's why I suspect not, because the whole time this was happening, I just didn't feel like I fit in. I was like, I don't fit into music. I don't belong in music. I always wanted to do video. And so I was reaching out to these bands to do the video part for them. And it never occurred to me to ever work on the music side. The way I ended up here is...
Like video for them quick, how? Like just...
Like music videos.
Okay.
So the first band on Napster, and we'll cut back here, but the first band I ever did, they wrote me back and they're like, well, actually, we're going to be in San Diego. Why don't we shoot a video together? Here's the dates we're going to be here. I'm like, cool, you can sleep on my floor for a couple nights. We'll shoot for like 2 days. They're like, great. On the end of the second day, we're playing like literally the shack at my school and it fits like 80 people. I'm like, great. They come. We spend, you know, this is back like when like you couldn't really shoot digital. So you have this like whole crew and you're getting all these people together, trying to figure it all out. And at the end of the 2 days, they play the shack. And it was this band called Taking Back Sunday. And, you know, I literally just found some demos on Napster and had emailed them. And so, did like one of their first videos ever. And they introduced me to their manager. And we became really, really, really close just from a working like relationship. And at the same time, concurrently, I was at the Warped Tour with my best friend. And we were so poor, we couldn't afford any food there. And they were filming something behind one of the stages. And because they were filming, there was catering on site. And we're starving. So me and my friend sneak backstage and we're eating the food. And there's this woman there who's like very clearly knows what's going on. And we start talking to her and we're like, oh, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm working on this production. We're like, oh yeah, we do production too. And we like trade and she hands me her card. And I'm like, well, do you ever need interns? Like, I'm just doing, you know, videos, but I'd love to like keep doing stuff. And this is so cool. I love the Warped Tour. She's like, yeah, great. Literally just call me. So I go home to find the card in my pocket the next day. Google hadn't been invented yet. So I was on like Alta Vista or something like that. Mm-hmm. I look her up and she's the manager for the Smashing Pumpkins.
For sure.
Oh, wow. I was like, this is unreal. So I call her up. I'm like, do you remember me? She's like, yeah. I'm like, do you manage the Smashing Pumpkins? She's like, yeah. She's like, and she's like, I'm like, do you still want an intern? She's like, yeah, just come over. So I come over and she's part of this big company, and she's like, I don't need an intern, but like the film department needs an intern. And the concept of the company was they like took in sports agents, managers, writers, a movie division, a touring division, brought in like all these people, and they put them under one house, and they said, we're gonna have this synergy here that like everyone's gonna work together. But what I think they didn't account for was when you get all these like big time people in a building, they don't really want to work together. They want to work for themselves. And so it was a very like interesting time for me to be an intern at this big company. And I was working on the film and the TV and doing all this stuff. And I was like working on these movies. But at the end of the day, I was still the intern. So I was making coffee for everyone and photocopies and like filming all the behind the scenes stuff with like Busta Rhymes and Exhibit and like Tommy Lee. It was so weird. The whole thing was so weird. Yeah. And the awesome. Only person, there was one person at the company to start, whoever pulled me aside was just really nice to me, and because he didn't have to be, he was just really nice. And it was Kevin Lyman, who you know started the Vans Warped Tour. And for me, I didn't even really know who Kevin was that much, but I knew the Warped Tour because I'd been going so much. I didn't really understand his involvement, and he became that guy who was just for me, like, dude, let me just help you. Like, I just believe in what you're doing. You seem passionate. You seem really cool. And no one had ever done that or treated me that way before. And to this day, there's Kevin, there's one other person who really was there not because they wanted anything, but because he really believed in the scene and they believed in paying it forward and just fostering a healthy community, which just makes it better for everyone, right? Like working with good people and having good people like come into the scene. And so I very consciously made an effort to say, cool, if I ever get to do anything in the industry, like, I'm always going to write back to anyone who writes me. I'm always just going to be supportive of this community. Like, I do feel very lucky to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that happens on its own. It's a very conscious effort from everyone to keep it going and to support it.
We didn't know that, number one.
Well, that's why that compliment from Beth was so nice, because, I mean, ultimately, that's why I'm still here.
Right.
You know, I feel pretty old, and I'm like, I'm still in music. All my friends have moved on from music.
Yeah.
But I still really do believe it with my heart and soul.
Well, I think that's why we do this. Like, I mean, it's sometimes it's really difficult to do this. Like, sometimes sometimes it is really difficult. You know, because we work in the same realm, mm-hmm. for the most part, and there's not a ton of, like, there's not a ton of money in, like, doing a lot of things that we really want to do and the things that we believe in, and it's hard. And, you know, especially, like, with video stuff, it's hard. It's mm-hmm. hard to do that because it costs a lot of money, and there's a lot of, like, logistical things that, like, you want to be perfect. But, like, I mean, I feel the same way in the fact that, like, we believe in stuff and really put our, we did you ever not think that you were going to be able to make this? Like, we did, because sometimes it's like, I feel so stressed and so out of my mind that I'm like, there's no way I can continue to do this forever, but what else am I going to do? Because I like this. And it's a really weird place to be in, because mm-hmm. you're like, what else is there? Like, mm-hmm. why would I do something I don't love, but how am I going to make a living?
Yeah, I guess it never occurred to me to try something else.
Yeah.
And my brother is, you know, a very successful startup in San Francisco, and worked at a big bank before that, and suit and tie and that whole thing. And I had done that for a second, and ultimately it was just like, I can't work for anyone else. But I knew when I started the company, you know, I was making as close to zero as you can make, and I moved back in with my parents, and I mean, literally living off of nothing.
Started a company, what company?
So after all of this happened in college and I'm shooting videos and stuff, I actually started a record label. I was like, there's all these bands and they're so good, and I have a little bit of savings. I'm going to take all my savings and give them to these bands. And I mean, to your point, I guess it just never occurred to me to not do that.
Yeah.
And I gave all my money to these bands, and I booked the tour, and I did the marketing, and I was on the phone with every store being like, will you literally take 5 copies? And I'm going, no. I'm like, well, will you take 2 copies? Like, I was doing all of that myself, booking their tour, you know, getting their crew, like, figuring it out. And I went bankrupt. I mean, I spent literally every dollar I had. A big part of it, too, I learned this. So my idea, which I think was ahead of its time, was me being young and understanding the implications of Napster. I was like, cool, well, as a label, I'm not going to compete with the big guys. So instead of selling records for $15, I'm going to sell all my records for $5, right? And I'm just going to get as many out there. Well, part of why the label didn't work was because when people saw a $5 record, I didn't realize this till after the fact, when they saw a $5 record, they thought it was inferior. Mm-hmm. And they assumed that the quality was just not as good. And so no one wanted to, they're like, I'd rather save my money and buy a good record than because you can sample, right? It's like, one of the biggest changes I think is so weird is we don't listen to records now without knowing everything about it,
right?
Like, we've either heard something, or we've seen a video, or we've read everything about it. But back in the day, you know, I would go to Tower Records at midnight, and there'd be like a new Weezer record, and you wouldn't have heard a damn thing off that record, and you would buy it for $18.99 and you'd take it home, and it might suck, and it might burn you, and you're out $20, and that's it. And the thought of anyone spending money on music without knowing everything about it right now is kind of unfathomable.
Yeah, right? But I feel like that's so beautiful. Like, I feel like I wish that that's how life was now. Instead of the album comes out,
right?
And everybody has something to say about it, mm-hmm. and, you know, people review it, and you know, it's like what you said, you see and you hear so many things about it before you get a chance to sit with it, and
uh-huh.
then you listen to one song, you uh-huh. know, at the office, and then you listen to another song in your car, and you haven't really uh-huh. listened to it beginning to end, and, you know, uh-huh. the way that it should be listened to.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, being, like, remember 1899 CDs. Uh-huh. 1899 uh-huh. is, like, a uh-huh. fucking, like, I was like, oh, this is a good one. You know what I mean? Because, yeah. like, it's not the 1599
right.
CD.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, right. and, like, I remember, like, there were, I listened to it was Jimmy Eat World Clarity and Newfound Glory, the not Sticks and Stones. The one was before that, Ricky.
Sticks and Stones was my.
Which one was the one jam. Before the Sticks and Stones?
It was just self-titled.
I think self-titled.
Yeah, it was the self-titled one. Those were the two that I'd listen to all the way through, laying on my floor because you. And then, like, I know every place where it skipped. Like, I knew every single. Like, now I know those songs, and in my head, when I hear them back, I'm like, there's supposed to be a skip there.
Right. Which That's is exactly
like,
right.
Yeah, which is. We don't. No generation now will ever hear that. We're also at, like, this really strange pivotal point where we were the last generation that actually used books and computers in school.
Mm. Does that not happen?
Yeah, I don't think so, really. What? Right? There are not really books anymore.
I mean, we just... Well, we had books and no computers.
Right.
And then we had books and computers.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
And now they've got, like, both, you know, probably both. But, like...
It's, but it's, like, mostly digital.
It's mostly digital. And so, like, we were...
I would have fit in my locker much easier when I got pushed in without all those books.
But I, like, love books. But also, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, now it's really, really, really strange. I think that the... I think... What's going to happen sooner or later is we're going to look back and be like, remember that time? That was that. I think we're going to look back on this and think that this was the good old days.
Do you still read physical books?
I don't read any books.
I do. I love them.
I still read physical.
Yeah, I've tried one time and I can't ever do it again. Like physical books or nothing.
But how do you listen to music?
Mostly
digital, right?
Yeah, digital.
Yeah, and I don't understand. I don't know why. Like, to me, it feels... Like, I'm like, oh, I should be analog, but I still listen digitally.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, you can listen to as much stuff as you want.
Yeah.
No, but it's just weird because I've tried really hard to go to a Kindle because I love to read on a plane or to travel or something like that, and I really can't. And what's interesting is whereas in music, everything's totally digital. There was a big report that came out, 13 to 17-year-old kids, so like the next generation, how do they listen to music, right? How do they find music? Where is it coming from? And this is a big part of my job, is like figuring out all this stuff. So this is an indicator of where things are headed. What percentage of this next generation listens to CDs? Do you have any idea?
Probably like 1%.
Yeah, it's 2%.
Yeah.
2% listens to CDs.
And it's probably only in cars. And it's probably only probably only because their cars have a CD player.
Yeah, because new cars don't even have it.
Yeah. That's probably what it is. It's probably due to the fact that there's some circumstances that make them listen to CDs.
Right, so it's shocking that when we put out a CD that anyone buys it because it doesn't make sense. Sure. Whereas now books are actually going the opposite way. Everyone tried digital. Physical is actually making the big comeback. Physical's going more and more and more. So, you know... I found it very interesting that everyone's just completely accepted music should be and always will be, I guess, digital now, more or less, with few exceptions. But books are still something much more tangible.
I was never a big reader, honestly. And, like, I've always wanted to be, but I just never was. And I think, I don't know if it's like...
Well, you're very visual, it seems like, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm also, like, I mean, I write a lot, though, is the thing. Mm-hmm. I just don't read a lot.
Mm.
So, like, I have a ton of stories, like, on my computer, but I don't... Mm-hmm. I haven't read a lot of them, and I don't know why that... I think the older I get, the more I'll get into that. Like, you know, your taste changes as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't used to like green pepper, and now I kind of like green pepper. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's like one of those things where you're just like, oh, I guess today I like that now. And I think it's going to be one of those things where, like, I don't remember my dad reading a lot when I was there. And now all that motherfucker does is read crossword puzzles. Mm. So it's like, I think that's just what happens is natural progression. And I'm excited for it. I'm just waiting for it.
Well, I think part of, too, because I think about this a lot as far as our medium, right? And it's like people like stories. And when you listen to a record, it takes you on a story. Even if it's a pop song, it takes you on a journey of falling in love, or it talks about a breakup. And 95% of number one songs are about falling in love or breaking up and falling out of love. And that's a really compelling story, and that's interesting. But you can also tell that same story in a book, or you can tell that same story in a music video, or you could tell it in a movie. And I think, you know, to be able to say, like, oh, well, this one's a better way or this one's a better way, we just want to relate in some way. And for me, as a kid, I loved music videos. Like, that's why I wanted to work.
That's why I do them.
Yeah,
that's why
it's brilliant, right?
Literally pay for them.
Like, to tell a story in 3 minutes, visually.
That is why I do them. Mm-hmm. Like, I like doing that. And then I do get Ricky came to this thing that I spoke at last night on this panel, and they were like, what do you think, why do you think people are so drawn to visual, mm-hmm. like media? And I was like, well, because it's quick, like Instagram is now a minute mm-hmm. long mm-hmm. to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, everybody's attention span's like pretty short. You mm-hmm. know, we had Vine for which was seven seconds, mm-hmm. and they managed to tell stories in 6-7 seconds that like did pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I think that now, like, it's hard to grasp the attention of somebody that for like such a long time that you can tell a story in 3 minutes. I think 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes is a great length of time to go through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like music videos.
I have a very close friend. I met him. He was literally homeless from Detroit. He moved out here. He just wanted to work in music. An extremely long story cut short. He now runs a TV network. He's like the head of a very well-known TV network. And we were discussing exactly this the other day. And he said, I spend millions of dollars on a TV show. And to a kid, their resource is time. So to a kid, they look at my $1 million TV show and they look at a makeup tutorial as the exact same thing. And to them, there's no difference in quality. There's no difference in their entertainment value. And he's just like, I have to figure out how I'm going to survive up against that, right? Because as a kid, like, anyone can be telling these stories, and maybe that story is like, yeah, how to put on makeup or unboxing something interesting, but a kid only has so many hours in a day. So he's like, so why would someone watch my thing over this other thing when to them it's almost equal? So we have to become more compelling storytellers now.
Which I think is challenging, and I think is also really cool.
I agree.
Like, I think it's cool. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, and I mean, now it's, with technology, you're able to tell a story quicker. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get to the point really quick due to like VFX and like mm-hmm. a ton of shit, which is good or bad. Like, it's not who's to say like what it is, but we have the ability to kind of do whatever we want now. Mm-hmm. Like, a long time ago, if you wanted to like say you wanted to travel across the world in a minute, mm-hmm. how do you do that besides like drawing a picture of a map and then doing those like dot things, right? And doing this, now we can get like have somebody in the other side of the world take pictures, like videos, and shoot, give it to us. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool the way that like we're progressing as technology mm-hmm. fucking increases.
Is that
the right thing?
Yeah, I'm curious because I do feel like with all of the storytelling, I do feel like almost back to the original story of like, oh, can I talk to someone about something random in a coffee shop? And the answer is no. Like, is that culturally dividing us on some level, right? And I'm sure this is part of a much bigger conversation. But as we're relating more and more and more to stories told not through our personal friends, as we're now telling them and learning about them from people across the world and seeing different things, like, it's expanding us culturally. But is it also closing us off socially in a different way? And maybe it's just different. It's not better or worse.
I mean, so everything is good, bad.
Yeah.
Well,
which
I
is
guess
what,
so.
Which
I
is
mean,
like
also,
what,
I feel like a lot more people think that they know someone, right? So mm-hmm. it's like you put something on your Instagram story and everybody sees it. So mm-hmm. next time you see someone that you barely know, mm-hmm. they feel like they know you. So now there are so many fucking people who like feel like they know you, and you're like, I've talked to you once.
Well, you must deal with that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is it weird? Because I mean, you do post it, right? So the point of posting it is to show people.
Right.
But
yeah.
Then is it weird when people come up and are like, oh, how's this
yeah.
thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it kind of is weird.
It's like,
I don't know.
Probably for you, because you post a little bit more personal stuff than
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I just don't like it when people call me by my handle. But, like, I mean, I made the mistake. I just made funny. The mistake. I just made
no,
the mistake.
No, but they do is the thing.
I said right. I don't like it.
I know.
Yeah, like,
but,
they do.
But, yeah, that's what's funny. I ran into my neighbor mm-hmm. who I, like... So here's the thing. Like, I follow this guy on Instagram because he has the best style I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And he had this dress that, like, I really wanted, and I've been looking for it on the internet. And so I comment on it all the time, like, this is the best dress. And I figured out that he lives in my building.
Whoa.
But he knew Morgan, like, that's how I met him. And so I ran into him, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, you're Morgan's friend. He's like, who? And I'm like, party wizard. He's like, oh yeah, I love that guy.
Oh wow. Yeah,
which is a weird thing. You know, when I started Instagram right when it kind of came out, and yeah. I was like, oh, this isn't going to be a thing.
Right.
I was like, what's the dumbest name I can think of right now? Right. And then that, guess what? It turned into a thing. Uh-huh. And yeah. So like everybody's like, that's a great name. And I'm like, well, I don't party, and like, I don't care about any of that other shit. Like, right. I go back and forth every day with being like, if I didn't have the businesses, I would delete everything that I have. I would literally delete everything.
That sounds very liberating.
It is. Let me tell you, dude, it's depressing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we work in digital and social media, but like a lot of stuff like is hard. It's hard to, I mean, especially for me, looking at, I have a thing where I'm just like, that person is doing more than me. Like, what? I have this thing where like, it's not really a comparison, but it's like you compare yourself to everything else you see. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like a human nature thing. Mm-hmm. Some people have it more than others, you know, like, but you know, I'm an alcoholic. So everything is really like intensified, like mm-hmm. all the time. Everything that I do is like really, really 100% or, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's a very strange place to live in. And especially seeing that on the internet all the time is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of it is overwhelming all the time. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, not good or I'm great or I'm not, you know, it's like a really strange feeling to be able to see all of the things all the time.
So question for you. So first the setup to the question. So my very first job, I had gone to school, right? And I got out of business. I started the TV station instead. And I started learning more about media studies. And I was very fortunate. We had a very interesting media studies that was about the social and cultural effects of media. And, you know, this was back when companies were trying to, like, glean information from you and try and, like, put pieces together and track you for the first time and figure out who you really were. And my first real job, the parent company's job, was to collect email addresses from people and do direct marketing. And I was so opposed to it, I almost quit the job. That was very unrelated to this, but on principle, I was like, I don't feel comfortable doing this. And now, you know, if you buy a Google phone, you're giving it every single piece of information you could ever think of so that it knows every single thing about you and predicts everything ahead of time. And like that shift of asking people, you know, for information, and for people to be like, the shift from people being like, I don't feel comfortable with that, to please take it, right, is one of the most fundamental shifts, I think, in our culture. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing all of this, like, do you ever feel like it's invasive, and would you ever just stop?
I mean, at this point, like I said, like, if I didn't have the businesses, like, mm-hmm. I would stop.
Do you think it would affect your social life?
I don't know. I can't tell. Maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of where I'm with it, because I'm like struggling to, like, we work so much that like I'm pushing myself to go out mm-hmm. like all the time. Like, I'll go do things that I don't want to do, and I end up having a pretty good time. Mm-hmm. But like before we had this stuff, like, we had to figure out what to do without it. Mm-hmm. We had to figure out what to do without social media. Mm-hmm. I know it's possible to do that because we did that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been kind of trying to do. And I've been trying to like hang out with people that like I really like, go to dinner with people who I find fascinating, like hang out with people who are genuine. And instead of just, you have these like flashy lights and LA parties and shit. Mm-hmm. And you know, I never end up having a good time there. Mm-hmm. Like, I never end up having a good time. And I'm at the point where like, I'm 33. I want to talk to people that I like. I want to do things that I like and not really waste a lot of time looking like I'm having a good time. Mm-hmm. And it's, so that's where I've been at, and I haven't actually done a lot of going out due to the internet mm-hmm. lately. I've been doing it a lot just through relationships and friends and shit. So I think I'd be better off without it. And I don't think I would look at what other people are doing and compare it to myself as much. And it'd probably be, I think I'd be better off, but it's necessary. It's like, the thing is, it sucks because you feel like you're in this position where it's necessary mm-hmm. to have it mm-hmm. because it's 2017. Mm-hmm. If you don't have fucking social media,
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of really good things come from it too. Mm-hmm. You know, like
yeah, a lot of good things do come from it.
I went skydiving two Fridays ago.
Oh, I was gonna ask you, why would you do that?
I mean, yeah, and that came because of social media and email.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, okay. We did. It was basically to do a vlog for Fearless Records, and we were gonna do a podcast with this band, The White Noise, and it just didn't line up. So a month later, they're like, we're back in town, but instead of just like doing a podcast, why don't we just jump out of a plane and kind of like, you know, film us on the way down there and doing the whole thing. And I was like, yes.
I watched the video.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got suckered into doing that a long time ago. I regret it.
Why?
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, you don't really regret it. I'm like, no, I absolutely regret it. It was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. I didn't want to do it.
But you didn't feel good after?
So the summer set was shooting a video.
Brian told me that he did that.
So the concept of the video was everyone overcoming their fears. And one of their fears was a fear of heights.
Let's see if Brian has texted me during this, actually.
So he might have texted me.
He probably texted me.
I got a text.
From Brian?
Yeah, what is your life like today?
He said that?
Yeah, I just got it. Anyway, so the point was, so they all suited up, and they all jump out of the plane, and as the plane's taking off, they're like, oh, we have one more seat, do you want to do it? And I was like, well, I'll never get a chance to do this again, sure, let's do it. So we get on the airplane, I'm like, oh, this is fine. They open the door, we fly out. I was like, why am I doing this? This is terrifying. There's nothing about this I enjoy.
No?
I'm glad you liked it. I mean,
you didn't land and you're like, oh, I'm glad. That, really?
Nope.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. Like,
you're just pure terror.
I don't think that I would enjoy it either.
But I think I love doing weird stuff. Like, I've always loved just doing random things with random people. Because I think that's what life is. You know, you just have to. I mean, for a day, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do this because this is crazy. But then, I don't know. I was like really depressed that week. So like I need to do something.
That's a rush. Kind
of, yeah. But yeah, I feel like my best experiences in life are just doing super random things. And yeah, I think it was interesting that kind of came together because I've always wanted to go skydiving, but I don't know if I would ever like book it and go, but I was like, here's this opportunity and I won't back out because it's part of this thing, you know?
So, I feel like doing just interesting and fun things. I feel like, and I could be totally wrong, that's sort of how Emo Night started.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how it started.
It was like, wouldn't it be super fun if...
Yeah, we just did it
as a friend.
Yeah, because I mean, we just did it for fun.
That's when we kind of met. It was just like, oh, here's people just doing really cool things. We respect that. That's really awesome. We should just meet people doing really cool things because they like it.
That's how we met. And I didn't know your name for like 6 months, and I just called you Sweet Beardy Face.
Yeah, and I was like, who are these people that my roommate invited? Who are these people you keep inviting over?
Yeah. I was like... That's I know, I think at the time...
You remember, like, get these fools out of here.
At the time, I was probably drinking.
He's inviting everyone over. Every day I come home, there's just someone new. Yeah. But you guys are really cool. I like that.
I love that.
I know. You guys do keep it very open and family-oriented, community-oriented. Like, you guys really do that. And as opposed to just, like, you know, people being like, we're a community. You guys actually open your doors and bring people in. Except Brian, though, because every time he fucking go over there, he's like, why am I not invited to my own manager's house again?
Yeah, well, it's not, usually it's not even premeditated who we have, but the house is designed.
Oh, we have to say that.
No, our house is set up, and we're very fortunate. We live, you know, we live in a place that has a big dining room and a big kitchen, and we're able to host. And the whole idea is like, I think if any of us wanted to go get high-paying jobs and go live that other life, we could do it. But the reason why we do this is because we get to work with people we really like. And we have, I mean, community is ultimately the reason why I do this. This is the only community I've ever felt like I've belonged in. And so to be able to just have an open-door policy of, hey, anyone wants to come by? Cool, like, we'll have dinner. Let's cook. Let's hang out. Let's, like, make music in the backyard. Oh, you want to use the backyard to throw a concert? Cool, you can do that. You want to do an art show? Cool, great. We have space for you. Like, why wouldn't we, right? So I just thought it was really cool. Like, you know, walk down. There's always randoms in there. I've met bands. I've met bands that are now clients through that.
Yeah.
I've met employees who I literally walked outside. And I'm like, who are you? What are you doing here? Oh, cool. That's really cool. A week later, like, hey, you should come work at the company. Great, awesome. I mean, that's how half that stuff happens.
Yeah, I met my future husband-in-law at your house.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's a good story, too,
I
mean, right?
You know, it's... Yeah, I feel like I've met so many people at your house that maybe, like, we just email with all the time. I'm like, oh, this is who you are, you know?
You did something that you did a long time ago, recently.
What?
Oh, yeah, you did. You redid the thing that you did once.
You redid the thing.
Oh, I restarted a label.
Yeah.
It's important. I know. Everyone's like, why would you do it? Yeah. Here's...
I do like the logo a lot.
Thank you. That's my real cat. Yeah, that's actually my cat. She's so cute. She deserves a label.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I may. I'll show you.
But let's hear it.
You say something about it.
No, I want to know. I also mean, because we've been in this position too, where people have wanted us to start a label, but it's a lot of work, and it's you know, and it is the and it has the potential to be kind of shitty sometimes. But I mean, I feel like you know that. If anybody knows that, you know that. And I want to, like, I think that by you starting this is a really huge move.
Yeah, it is. Really, it's really scary.
It's a scary, cool thing.
It's like you said, sometimes you just have to do things. Everything I've ever done has been, like you said, it's just like, oh, this seems like it would be really a big challenge.
Yeah.
I have some free time. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
And I opened a restaurant like that. I, like, quit a job like that. Yeah, this was one where I think we need to talk about just music in general for just a second, which I know is weird for a podcast. You know, we are, as a company, we're a small company. We only sign bands once every... We probably only get a new client every year, maybe every 2 years.
When you say
every
we
two
as a
years.
Company, what company are you talking about?
I'm sorry. So I work at K-Management. I founded K-Management. We are a management company, primarily within this scene and this community. Mm-hmm. So after I did the Taking Back Sunday video stuff, I made friends with the manager. A few things happened, and I ended up working with Taking Back Sunday on their management team. I was their day-to-day person for the first two records, and I learned everything, you know, that from their manager. I'm so lucky and thankful to be able to be a part of that team. And when they signed to Warner Brothers, I was just at this weird moment in my personal life. I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to go start, like, my own thing. And that was, like, 12 years ago, right? So now we have... employees on the East Coast and in London, and
so
you're
25.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, it was weird because the first thing I did was like, God, well, if I get to pick who I want to work with, who would I work with? And I was at these festivals, and everyone was like being really nice and really being polite to each other, and I'm like, that's cool, but like, where's like the Beastie Boys? Mm-hmm. Like, where's the band that's just gonna like doesn't give a damn about anything? It's gonna trash the room. I'm like, that's exciting. We need some excitement. So I looked and looked and looked, and I went on this new website called YouTube, and there was this video. 9 months I was looking for a band. I guess that's
9 months.
That's my number,
thing,
I guess.
Yeah.
And I saw this like mayhem on stage. I was like, that's it. And I'm like, who is this? And it was like their second show ever. And I booked a plane. I flew out, and I met these two dudes who I was like, oh, this was the wrong move. These guys, like, play Dungeons & Dragons. Like, this is not the mayhem that I was picturing. It was these two guys named 303. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, like, we make music because we're going to college or we're going to medical school. We're going to, like, be doctors and professors. And we only make music as, like, an outlet. Like, there's no long-term future in any of this. And I was like, well, when does school start? They're like, 6 months. I'm like, okay, give me 6 months. So, That song, the first song we put out 2 years later, went number one at radio worldwide, and that started the whole company. So since then, we're a management company. So we manage
that
artists.
That song was called what?
Don't Trust Me.
Mm-hmm. And the lyric was Don't Trust a Hoe.
And the song almost never made it.
Yeah, no, which is great. I like that a song title with Don't Trust a Hoe got you pushed into number one.
Well, but here's
like
why.
You started the whole thing.
But here's why.
Is telling.
Because everyone was following each other, and music tends to do this. When there's a kid now listening going, what kind of music should I make, and they see all the success right now is electronic music. Uh-huh. If you're a young kid, you're like, oh, I should get a laptop and make electronic music. Well, this was a bunch of kids who were like, oh, we don't really care about any of that, we don't even listen to that, we're just doing this because
We don't even care if we're successful or not. This is just our outlet for things. And those are always the ones that change, right? That changed the game. So when their music came out, there really wasn't anything like it. Katy Perry wasn't on the radio, Kesha wasn't on the radio, nothing was like that. This was actually one of the first songs that didn't sound like anything else. And because it was so weird and so different and had like these weird lyrics and mm-hmm. stuff, because of, not in spite of, was why it was successful.
I mean, I think that most things, well, this is the problem that I've had since moving to LA mm-hmm. and working in music, is they're like, when you meet with a band, you meet with management, you meet with producers, they're like, this has to sound like this.
Yeah.
In order to do this.
Right.
Like, there's like
just
some
do
sort
the opposite of what everyone tells you.
It's just like literally, and I've gotten so frustrated right. with writing song. I mean, I'm a songwriter too. Like, I do yeah. all this shit. And, you know, I've worked with producers that are like, well, this is going to sell. And I'm yeah. like, yeah, but who cares? Like mm-hmm. that, it sounds the same as that. Mm-hmm. And the way that they reference things is by putting the same thing that's number one currently, mm-hmm. writing the same song, mm-hmm. repurposing it three or four times, and then mm-hmm. spinning out. And then so, I mean, I'm doing something that like I want to now. Well, I'm actually writing like, and so when I moved to California, I wrote so many songs, and we recorded them with a fucking ripped Pro Tools cracked version mm-hmm. in like sober livings and rehabs and shit in Newport Beach and mm-hmm. in Laguna Beach and shit, and those were the most important songs like that I think I've ever done mm-hmm. and I'm gonna put all those out, all the recordings out. I'm gonna mm-hmm. re-record them with some friends, like mm-hmm. some producers, and I was like, please make them sound not like radio songs. Like mm-hmm. I don't want that to say, and I'm not putting it out for anything, but it's a completely selfish thing. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna write I'm gonna tell a pretty linear story from like the time that I moved here to currently, and like put out like voice notes and do all this shit just so it doesn't sound like anything I've heard mm-hmm. because I'm really, really over it, and I don't want to make any money off of it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything with it. And mm-hmm. I just want to do it strictly to tell a story and strictly to make myself like feel somewhat fulfilled in a way that like other music doesn't make me feel, because I know mm-hmm. it's been made for a purpose. And mm-hmm. this was made because it was pure.
Okay, so I got to cut in. We have 5 minutes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
what should I say?
Tell us a little bit about the label. We want to, yeah, how do we do all this stuff? How do we plug the things?
Oh,
what are you excited about? What do you have coming
up? You signed
up?
Two bands yeah. to begin.
Well, with. Okay, so as a company, as a management company, we're very small as far as our artists go, right? So I actually think we're one of the smallest ratios and employees to number of bands. Most companies our size, I think, would have a lot of bands. And what we said as a company was, we're not here to just sign a lot of artists. We want to do a lot with the creative talent that we have. So 303, you know, early on we said, look, let's do some writing and some producing with you guys, and that started a whole division of the company. So now we have a writing division, we have producing, we represent composers, we do a lot in publishing, we do TV commercials, we do jingles, we do video games, we do all this stuff. And I was just like, I'm really proud we're doing all this stuff. But I'm getting away from this like community-driven mentality that is still the reason why I work here. And for me, being able to say Drive Through Records or Vagrant Records is so important because of everything it conjures. And I think it's hard for like a management company to be able to like say that. So in order to be fulfilled, I think it's part of our company culture to be able to put our name on something very publicly and say, we're super proud of this. And it fits in, you know, to now be able to have a distribution channel within this whole framework as a management company. Okay, it's cool from a business perspective, but actually to be able to point to say, like, cool, this is something in the public that we can put our names on that we're really proud of. We stand behind these bands. We're really excited about them. The deals are super artist friendly. We sign for one album. We do an album together. If you want to go do something else, great. It's wonderful. Like, I probably will never, ever make money from it, but that's not the point. It's a big part of our company culture, and that's why it's so important.
It's important. It's so cool. No one does that anymore.
Maybe they're all smarter than me.
I don't know. I keep searching for this thing to be fulfilled, mm-hmm. right? And like, it's hard because like you do these, you accomplish something and then I go, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like a relief and like an accomplishment feeling for like a little, like, you know, hour,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And then I go, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in a lot of ways, like we're similar in that aspect where we keep trying to figure out like what is fulfilling and what's the right mm-hmm. thing and what is the next right step to make to do good. And like to feel like whole as a person, and I think that by doing something for the right reasons, which is what you're doing with this label, is that next right step.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see where it goes, and because I know that you're doing this from a really genuine place, and mm-hmm. so I'm just like really excited to see how it grows and what comes of it.
Yeah, my biggest thank you, and my biggest hope would be that these bands actually move on, right, and continue to go to bigger teams and we can still be involved with them on a supportive level, but that they go on and are very successful and we're able to say like, hey, you know, we helped, you know, get you in the early days,
yeah.
bring you to all of these people and bring you into our community and teach you a bit about the culture and, you know, let you go on and have a very successful career. So that would be a big win for me. But I do really appreciate the support. You guys have always been supportive of everything we've always done, and you've had almost, I think, our entire roster through at some point, and that's very nice.
That was literally fucking whole deal.
You know everything. It's real scary. But I know everything about you. You know that.
It's true. Yes, we know.
I'm very popular.
I watch your Instagram, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, this was really great, and I do appreciate you guys so much for having me on, but also just for supporting the community and to see the success of Emo Night and everything surrounding it. Really is like just another great mark of when you really believe in something and you do something because you believe in it and other people recognize that, and it builds another community and one that's not just online, that's actually offline and mm-hmm. is tangible and people can be a part of. That's what we really all need, and that's why we're all here.
It's a super authentic thing that we're all doing, and I think it's really, it is important right now. Like I said, I think we're at like a weird turning point. We're going to look back and be like, those were the good days. Even though it's hard to see it because we're in it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really hard to see like when you're right in mm-hmm. the middle of something. But mm-hmm. I do believe that we'll look back and be like, that was hard and awesome and ultimately very cool. So
I agree.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.